You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
Not in what is this friggin' groove music app? I need to like go into my Windows settings and like pick the media player because I don't know what the crap groove is supposed to be, but I never used it.
All right, are you ready?
okay, three.
Okay,
two, one.
Haha, mine's not playing.
All right, start over.
Sorry.
This week on the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast, we recall a time when games were complete when you released them, more or less. In Future Retro, Mink continues his Bayonetta review, and in Pile of Shame we talk about an incomplete game 30 years gone now, a haiku, your voicemails, and more.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Bing.
Yeah, I was feeling nostalgic the other day, and I was just remembering some things that the games used to have, like one-button joysticks and paddles. What about paddles?
Like Atari or...
Yeah, like Atari or something like that. Do you remember... I remember when they were thinking that trackballs would be a big thing.
Oh, sure. I mean, funny enough, like my mouse is a trackball, and I believe
Oh, really?
I used a trackball mouse to play a lot of Quake 3.
And then you don't hear too much about the trackballs anymore. I don't know, maybe people still use them, but I remember they made a trackball for the Nintendo that you could get, and I think, and Joyball is based kind of on trackball.
I was going to ask. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I remember that, like, a lot of arcade games, the classic Centipede, things like that, they were all with the trackballs, and it's interesting. And then I was thinking about another nostalgic thing. Do you remember you used to buy a game, and, like, the whole game would be on the cartridge? Do you remember these? I don't know. I maybe for our younger listeners, you might not be familiar with this, but they used to put the entire – when you'd buy it, you'd get the whole game. Not parts of it, not like the early versions, but like it was so weird. And you know what? And like if the game wasn't very good, it wasn't gonna get good later.
Right, right.
The
and
whole
you could,
game was right there.
You could sell it.
Oh yeah, you could sell it, and someone else could put it on their system and have the whole game.
Yeah, that's
so weird. And you know what would be inside the box?
What's that?
It wouldn't be a code for DLC.
Oh,
it would be,
yeah.
Hold on, a manual, I think it was pronounced. Manuel? Manual, sorry.
I was thinking like Batmanuel.
Yes. You know what you used to be able to buy for PC games? They were called expansion packs.
I hear you
they
can
were.
Still do that.
It was like DLC, but like
right.
The distribution method was a guy at Software Etc.
Which I'm sure doesn't exist anymore.
Software Etc. got melded into GameStop, which also bought Electronics Boutique.
Sure.
I remember going to the Mall of America the first time. You know the Mall of America. You've been there.
Oh, naturally.
You've been there a lot. But when I first went there, there was all kinds of different software stores. There was Software Etc., which was near Camp Snoopy. Both of those things are gone.
Oh, Camp Snoopy's gone?
And there was... Yeah, Camp Snoopy became the Nickelodeon experience or Nickelodeon universe.
Great, okay.
But anyway, wow, you really haven't been there in a while. It's got a Ninja Turtles ride. It's pretty cool.
Oh, man, I should bring my kids there, huh?
Probably. I don't know. You'd probably have more fun if you didn't. But yeah, there used to be like an Electronics Boutique, a Software Etc., and they had different stuff. Like they were different enough, but now everything is just GameStop. Let's go back to this nostalgia. But yeah,
yeah,
I'm gonna hold up a game right now. It's a Sega Saturn game called Puyo Puyo Sun, and you know what? The game's on the disc. Okay, let's go back.
So last episode of the podcast, we were talking about this a little bit. We touched on it. If you listened, then you have an idea where we're going with this already. But it was just really strange. We were realizing after we had talked about Oxenfree and Thimbleweed Park that both of these games were like the completed versions with like all the patches, additional features. And whatnot that were, you know, on the cartridge. So in this case, the Switch version was complete, but these are originally Kickstarter games or PC games, indie developer stuff where they had to get the game out so they could sell it and make money to make more game. Which, as a software developer myself, my professional life, I really appreciate getting the minimum viable product out. You know, and it's not like they did half the game and then did half the game later. And I'm not trying to knock Telltale here because that wasn't their plan, but it still worked out pretty good. There was still a whole game that people played when these games were released, is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, we shouldn't be surprised. They called it Broken Age. I mean, you know, I mean, there's got to be a break there somewhere.
I see what you did there,
but yeah, thank you. But I mean, I like that that by the time I played Oxenfree, it was, I'm assuming it's done now. I mean, I think it's probably the complete experience. But if I would have joined in from the beginning, I would have felt a little bit like I was being used as a beta tester.
Don't beta testers usually get paid?
Ouch! Yeah, or at least not have to pay. No, we're in a different age now. We are in a different age. You know, Steam Greenlight and things like that?
Sure, sure.
We meaning people who are not me, but like I'm using the royal we.
Sure, sure.
Are at an age right now where we're paying to basically test a game for a company is not only a thing but a fairly popular thing. Have you ever done a Greenlight game from Steam?
No, I haven't. I mean, I've done some public beta tests. Halo Reach, I did a lot of. So I ranked up my multiplayer character as high as I could go. I did Destiny for a little bit and decided it wasn't going to be for me. So that's about as far as I've gotten.
I used to beta test iPhone games.
Oh, okay.
Back in the day, and you had to go to like a special, I don't know, service menu or something. It was very interesting. I enjoyed that, but unfortunately, you know, you get sometimes you get a pretty low quality thing coming out and you're like, oh, this is arduous to test this.
Sure.
And I'm at the age right now where I have enough games that I have complete experiences that I don't, feel like a lot of urge to, do beta testing, but I guess occasionally I pledge to a Kickstarter reward tier that includes a beta.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But and so I have a few things right now that are still in progress on my Steam, but for the most part, these days I kind of wait till a game's done. And not just released done, but like I wait till they kind of work the bugs out.
Yeah, because I was going to say, how do you know, right? I think the highest profile failure in the last year was the release of Mass Effect Andromeda, which will be about a year by the time this podcast comes out.
Yeah,
and in that year, I have barely played it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to rehash things we've discussed in the podcast before.
Please listen to our, let's see, this would be two casts ago.
Yep.
There'll be a link.
Yeah. They fix a lot of the problems, but you know, this is different than say an indie game, or, you know, some other games where it's just like, yeah, there were some real problems in how it behaved. So they made some changes to it. I'm pretty sure that BioWare, had to push it out, and EA was didn't seem like it cared.
This was not their vision. Like
Right.
Oh my.
Right.
Oh my goodness. Wouldn't it be great if the characters walked all weird and looked like ducks talking?
Yeah, I mean, all the videos that came out, like comparing the shading and stuff, and all the kind of detailed work you'd expect. I mean, they weren't incapable; they just didn't have the time. Yeah. They've been working on this game for years, right? So it makes me really nervous when I hear something like, you know, Dragon Age 4 is going to have quote unquote live features, because it just sounds like they're doing gaming as a service, and I mean that can be okay. See Splatoon, but.
Yeah, but it can also be terrible. See the recent controversy with Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Oh, sure.
Where the game, where the experience is being added on to, but not always in a way that customers are appreciative of.
Sure, sure. So I think this is a good thing to try and tease out. You know, what's good? To what degree was this intentional by, you know, the publisher and or the developer? To what degree is it abusing the relationship with the customer? And are there any other cases from way before the modern era? Spoilers, I have thought of one.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Yes, you can sponsor the Famicom Dojo video game podcast. Just head over to littlepodcast.com, find Famicom Dojo, and click on the sponsor button. Make sure you email us a message at podcast@famicomdojo.tv so we can read your message on the show. We'll try to make this more straightforward soon, I promise. And there are still some t-shirts left. Back orders are being filled now. Most of sizes small through extra large are still available. And for the price of a podcast sponsorship, you can get stuff. For just a little bit more, you can get a season 1 DVD as well as part of your t-shirt bundle. Already got a t-shirt? Why not get the DVD? Just head over to famicomdojo.tv/store and show your favorite dojo host a little love.
All right, to what degree is this intentional? Well, to some extent, I mean, there's definitely ones that are intentional. Like, let's go back to Splatoon.
Sure.
A lot of people criticized the first one because it really looked like it was content starved when it came out. Not many stages, not many weapons for a shooter. But as it went on, stuff was added and added and added, and like the final game was like probably like three times as big as the original one. I'm making that number up, but that's at least how it felt to me.
Sure.
Because they kept adding stuff all the time. And unfortunately, the review scores for the original Splatoon, despite being kind of regarded as a new Nintendo classic right now, the review scores were pretty bad when it came out because of this. But then people were a lot more lenient when Splatoon 2 came out, which was also fairly light on content when it came out. But people were able to realize that the content would be coming. So, you know, there was something definitely intentional there.
Well, even in that case, for me, maybe it's because it is a sequel, they were able to start at like a higher threshold.
Oh, definitely.
Of completeness.
Definitely. And I think that's now one that's neither good nor bad, but kind of neutral. Did you play ARMS?
No. It didn't really appeal to me, honestly.
It was my kids really like it. My kids really like
ARMS. My kids probably would too.
And I enjoyed ARMS during the like global test punch. I played all of those, but actually, I think I might have gotten my money's worth before buying it.
Is it really called the global test punch?
It was called the global test punch.
I kind of realized that the Splatoon global test fire was already kind of a pun. I didn't realize how much. Okay, continue.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes, but anyway, but they had I don't know, 4 or 5 different sessions of that, and my kids really liked it, so we got in on all of those, and we had a blast. So when the game was about to release, we were so hyped up, and then we got in, played a few hours, and we're like, But what I'm saying is, ARMS released very light on content, but they continued to add stages, continued to add characters.
Sure.
But the thing is, ARMS never took off to the extent of Splatoon. So recently, Nintendo stopped adding content.
Sure.
And I think if it would have done better as a title, they would have continued adding content.
Sure.
So, like, it was good for the consumer that, you know, the game you got, you know, got added on to and added on to. But it was bad for the consumer because You know, how much additional content was kind of based on how well the game did. So I did, and the game as it launched and the game now are very different products. I also feel weird because there's at least a third more fighters right now, and the game is totally fine to play locally. You know, this game does, I mean, the online is not an integral part of it.
Okay.
But in the future, if the services go down, only the most bare bones version of the software is actually on the cassette, on the cartridge.
Sure, sure. Okay.
So I think as a customer, that's not a great thing. I think it would have been better if they would have kept this one in the oven a little longer until they had that content, and then put it out there. But that's just me. A lot of people were very pleased with the constant free updates.
Right, right. And that kind of like brings me to a point I want to make and try and define the distinction between what is a patch and what is DLC. Because a game like this kind of blurs that line.
Yeah.
A more recent example I can think of, I'm a publicized one anyway, is that I'm pretty sure that this Mario Odyssey feature that added this Luigi level or something.
The balloon thing? Yeah.
Yeah. It's a patch and not like DLC. So like it's not part of the original game that shipped, but there's a free update where you get it. So that means, you know, not intentionally per se, like it destroys the resale value of a Mario Odyssey cartridge it doesn't destroy it per se, because I'm pretty sure as long as there's no game breaking day one issue with it, the game is perfectly fine and playable. Right, there are games where that's not true, and them shipping it out with like game breaking bugs, or you know, worse, we've mentioned before, the game basically not being on the cart, might not only be laziness or you know, trying to meet like a deadline and then like shipping out the finished product as a day one patch, because you got to get the lead time for the physical copy, right? It might be a deliberate tactic in some cases to destroy the resale value of said cartridge.
I think, or disc. I mean, it's definitely a consequence that probably works out in their favor. But I think another thing is to avoid people selling their game, because if you're constantly releasing new content, it means that people are going to hold on to their game waiting for that content.
Right.
And that's not as big of a problem in the United States, but in Japan that's a huge problem because the resale value is so high. People want to rush to get through a game as fast as they can, because the faster they finish it and sell it, so that's why when Xenoblade came out, they announced, before they even announced the release date, they announced that there was going to be DLC.
Right.
You know, and I don't know. I don't. Okay, here, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Because you're an expert on this one.
Okay.
Would you at this point recommend Samba de Amigo to another person?
Oh, yes.
Because they can't get the whole experience anymore.
Well, okay. I mean, the difference there is that the quote-unquote DLC, at least for the Dreamcast versions, it's just an unlock code to what's on the disc already. So
correct.
So in that respect, you know, I know people complain about that. It's like, I can't get the whole game. I should have access to every bit that's available on this disc. So it's like, well, should you just like to jump to the end of the game then? Like, you know, where does that line end? But then if people demand a different delivery system, now we have the problem. It's like, well, now the game is not on the disc and they can't play it 100 years from now.
I understand, but
The Wii version was downloadable, I believe, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, the thing is, what I'm talking about with Samba de Amigo is the ones that you needed to go on SegaNet to get.
Right, which you can't do anymore. And like,
it's
so like
totally
if my VMU dies or gets lost, then there are songs I can't play on Samba. Now, a bigger problem is that those controllers don't work after a while.
Well, But I mean, obviously people have gone in and they've hacked the files. You can download a VMU, you know. You can, there are hoops you can jump through in order to still get those songs.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
people have found a way to do it, but do you think that lowers the value of a physical Samba de Amigo disc?
Not too badly, because I don't think that there were too many songs that were downloadable.
I don't know. There are quite a few, like 11 songs, I think.
Were there? Dang. See, I'm so used to playing it, like the full game. I'm not sure what I would actually miss if it came down to that.
It was mainly songs from Sega classics, like
Burning Rangers,
Space Harrier, Burning Rangers, Magical Sound Shower from what is that? Outrun. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So I mean, they weren't the advertised songs.
Right.
Like you go on the back of the box or the case, and you're not going to even see those listed. And it's the same, I suppose, with Super Mario Odyssey.
Right.
I think the fact that, for me, if you have a product that is playable from beginning to end,
mm-hmm.
and they have, like, okay, let's take another recent game, Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
Sure.
Okay. That game shipped in a way that you can fully play from beginning to end. All content was there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's DLC that's coming that's going to add additional stuff, but it is additional stuff. Like, a complete story was told.
Sure.
But what's happened is there's been several patches since then which have added to remove frustrating elements. They made the map better. They made navigation better. They have increased, allowed you to skip certain animations and sound effects that when you're, like, trying to do the rare blade, like trying to get rare blades, there's this animation that plays over and over. Now you can skip it.
Okay.
So you can just see what you get without going through all the rigmarole. Ooh. That might be the first time we've used the word rigmarole in the podcast. Anyway, just wanted to point that out.
Go back over all 151 episodes to make sure that's true.
We'll have to check.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that's the first time. But anyway.
Everyone divide up. Everyone take an episode. Report back to us.
Exactly. But for me, I still feel like the Xenoblade Chronicles 2 cartridge has value. Because you know you've still got the whole game, but at the same time, I feel like the people who are playing it for the first time now might have a better experience than I had playing it on launch. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And I feel that the better experience, if servers or things like that ever go down, you know, could be lost. What I'm hoping. And this is something that's made me very happy in the era of DLC is the whole idea of Game of the Year editions. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
A bit.
Basically, a version or like a complete edition or whatever that has all the DLC on it, usually released at a lower price. That's kind of what Mass Effect Trilogy did, but it didn't contain all the DLC.
Yeah,
it contained some. Yeah.
Enough of it that you wouldn't miss. Yeah.
Exactly. Or like I bought Disgaea 5 for the Switch, and it had like all the like probably $100 worth of DLC that the PlayStation 4 version had. It was just all on the disc already. And Dark Souls Remastered is going to have all of that. Skyrim,
which I picked up. I'm sorry. I didn't get Xenoblade Chronicles.
Why?
Like you wanted me to.
Why?
I really, really wanted to own a dog. Didn't you read that Tumblr thing?
Yes, I got that text. And at first I was like, did Sean buy a dog? Because I was thinking like an actual dog. Like maybe he couldn't get both of them because he needed to buy food or something. Okay.
No, there's this whole Tumblr thread about it. Like this guy wants to get a dog, but he can't adopt one because he has to have a child to do it. And he can't like have a child. Like, you can't just, like, find a child somewhere, so he, like, had to have his own or adopt one and, like, have his mother move in with him or whatever so that she could stay at home with the dog, and she can't stay at home by herself because she's a child, you know? And then...
Is that, like, Yeah. Is that like that whole thing or whatever of the old Penny Arcade cartoon? Like, I want to play Final Fantasy's Crystal Chronicles, but I need four Game Boys and four, and I need friends, and I need a house to play it in. And since
similar.
I don't have any friends, I'd have to hire hookers to play with me.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah, the whole thing. But so just to play this game is going to cost me thousands of dollars.
Right. And this, no, but, and this, yeah. And, in this case, you know, it's not very linear, right? So all this stuff happens. But the story, I should really find that Tumblr and link it in the show notes, because that's good stuff. But like, it's like, yeah, it's like, that's the kind of thing that can happen in this game. I want to play it.
All right. Okay. I'll tell you what, you really need to... Okay, you need to do one of two things, Sean.
Okay, yeah.
You need to either get Xenoblade Chronicles 2 so we can play it and talk about it.
Sure.
Or you need to get me a copy of Skyrim so I can play it so we can talk about it.
Oh, boy. Oh, that's rough. Well, I'm probably going to be playing Skyrim for a while. Are you winding down on Xenoblade? Because
I will be beating it tonight. I'm on the last boss now.
There you go.
Unfortunately, it depends. It depends who you ask, but they just released New Game Plus the other day, so so the whole thing might start again. I'm 165 hours into this.
That's
thing.
Too long to play a game again for me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but it's Xenoblade Chronicles.
Oh boy. Well, all right. You brought up Skyrim, and that wants.
I'm saying Xenoblade now? It's actually Xenoblade. Sorry.
Oh.
I switch back and forth between the two depending on who I'm talking to. So.
Oh.
Anyway. So Skyrim sounds like something I'd want, but I'd want the US version of it, because otherwise I gotta download big language patches to the Japanese version. Plus, I don't 100% trust that the Japanese version's gonna be uncensored. Recently that's a thing.
Oh really?
Yeah, a lot of like Grand Theft Auto 5 got censored in Japan and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it used to be you'd get the Japanese version to be the uncensored version, but now it's gone the other way.
Right. Those AO games don't sell well, or what?
Well, like a rated Z game can only be sold. You have to prove, you know, prove your age or something, and they can't be put with the regular games. They've got to like be behind the shelf. It's basically like the death sentence to a title. And Skyrim got a Z rating here in Japan, but still, it could still theoretically be censored.
Okay.
And I don't know. So just to be on the safe side, I'm probably going to get the US version.
Okay.
You can send it to me. It was just my birthday. Yay!
Oh, is that how that works?
That's how that works.
Well, I mean, you know, I've sent you Mass Effect and Lego Dimensions.
Yes,
and,
yes. I know. I know. But
I mean,
those
man,
were different.
Lego Dimensions is probably a pretty good example of this too, because it's like both DLC and patches and like physical. We've done a podcast about that before, so I don't want to go into it again.
But we should link to it.
Right. We will do that thing. But you mentioned Skyrim. It makes me think of Dragon Age again, this time as a positive example of DLC, because it's one of the best DLC experiences I've had, honestly.
Okay.
And that's because it's such a story-driven game, and those DLC packs are stories, basically, that aren't, you know, part of the main story.
Ooh, I'm actually intrigued, because I'm going to probably be getting the DLC for Zelda and Xenoblade 2. How do they incorporate that in? I mean, because where does it happen in the narrative? Is it something completely as an aside, or how does that work?
It depends. So, I mean, you know, there's the in-game stuff. Like, you run into a merchant and they say, hey, I can give you this magic wand. And then it very blatantly takes you to, like, the Xbox Live shop or whatever, which is not great. But, like, in that case, and I didn't realize it in my first playthrough, I actually had the code that came with the game to download that particular piece. That was the Shale character DLC pack. So they'll have an entire character party member that you wouldn't play with in the game. And, you know, in this case, it felt like it added a lot to the story. And it's again, kind of like that money grab thing. It's like you still have to pay us some money to have the quote unquote full game if you buy this used at some point, which, you know, that's why they include it with a new copy, because you can only, you can't resell that part of the game basically.
Yeah.
So that aside, the parts that I really did like, were, there was a kind of one-off thing that, told this part of the story from the Darkspawn's perspective. So it didn't really have a lot to do with your game per se. It was just a replay part near, a part near the end where you could kind of get an idea of what it's like to, be on the other side of this conflict, causing all the damage and destruction, and maybe get to a little bit of not so much motivation as to why they're doing what they're doing, but why they didn't have much of a choice. Mm. And that was kind of interesting. What was more interesting were, Liliana's song, Witch Hunt and, Awakenings. And Liliana's song, you hear about, you know, her story, you know, through, being a character, in your party. But then you actually get to play through what she went through with Marjorie, regardless of what decisions you made. And if you play through it, before you finish the main game, you get, items, in your inventory, in the main game. So it's a nice way to like flesh out her story. You get some cool items, on top of that. And it, the consequences of one doesn't really affect the other beyond that stuff you can get. So it's still a nice thing you can do before or after. And it, if you are like, you know, waiting for Dragon Age 2 to come out, then it's something to do. The other piece I mentioned was Witch Hunt, which was like kind of like a little, interstitial.
Okay.
Between the first and second Dragon Age games, although they didn't really follow up on its premise until the third Dragon Age game, but yeah, whatever. But then like Awakening was, I've likened more to like a high level stage for like if you're doing like an MMO or whatever. Like this is like high level content. So you have 20 more levels you can level up. You have a whole, it's a whole new game really. Like it's the real Dragon Age 2 to me, if you ask me. But you have all the, you know, a new set of characters. It's very much the template of the first game with a new shorter story that's like $20. You know, and so I was able to like mire myself in like basically the same game engine, but play three or four different games with it, which is really, really cool, because they didn't cost $60 each time I wanted to play it. Right. They were all add-ons.
OK, so well, I mean,
I enjoyed that.
That does sound like a positive. Why don't we think of some things when it hasn't been quite so positive?
Oh, I have some examples, but I did a lot of talking just now. So why don't you go first?
Okay. I mean, I just don't like it when a game is, to tell you the truth, I usually don't buy a lot of games that launch just for this very reason. But you know, there are definitely games these days that ship broken.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a new thing, but it's new in that our tolerance is getting higher.
Right.
Okay. I was a big fan of the Neo Geo Pocket game, Card Fighters Clash. Did you ever play it?
No, I was not big into Neo Geo.
The Neo Geo Pocket was so great, though. Like, I remember I used to play this this game with Ben back in the day, and the game was fantastic. It was like a collectible card game type thing. You can kind of compare it to like the Pokemon card game. But it was all kinds of SNK and Capcom fighters and characters. Super, super fun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But anyway, they made a DS version of it. It's an updated version, and they changed some things around, and it's not as good. It's really not as good. And one of the things that was really not as good about it is it shipped broken. You couldn't actually beat the game. It had a game-breaking bug, which would not allow you to reach the end of the game. And this was the Nintendo DS, so you could not download a patch. You could not download a fix. What you had to do is you had to send your cartridge back, and they'd send you a new one.
Okay.
So they had to do a recall. They took it off the shelves. But the thing is, you know, it was not, you know, the game wasn't super, super famous or, you know, or popular. So it wasn't known too much. And a lot of people never even found the bug. There exists today more broken copies of the game out there than one. So if you buy a used copy of it, you really have to check to see if it's the fixed one or not. Because more often than not, the ones that are out on the shelves are broken. And that cost SNK a ton of money. So that's bad. But at the same time, things like this preventing in the past made people a little more aware of making sure they shipped a product that was good enough to be completed and good enough to get good reviews. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's good and it's bad. Like, the good part was it forced developers and publishers to think a little more clearly about whether it really was good enough to ship.
Yeah.
Or whether they should wait, do a little more testing, do a little more tweaking. But now I think there's just this rush to hit like a Black Friday or rush to hit, you know, these targets to have a blockbuster every season. You know, that we're shipping out things that people, it's not an accidental bug being left in. It's people knowing full well that they're shipping something that they'll get to fixing later.
Right.
Or if it doesn't sell well enough, won't ever fix at all.
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of a calculation that these big AAA publishers are making. And that's why I much prefer and enjoy the indie games, because, you know, while they might have problems potentially, like, I haven't had a bad experience like that yet. Like, you know, any kind of iterative process on their end is more understandable because of like a money crunch, but they don't have someone leaning on them to like push an inferior product. Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I understand. They're going to get it out when they feel, you know, unless they really are like really running out of money.
Maybe
Broken Age was like that a little bit.
Well, I don't feel like Broken Age suffered for it. Like, it wasn't.
No.
Part one wasn't incomplete. I mean, it was, you know, the game story wasn't over. It was in two parts. Like, you know, they didn't patch it over and over again that I'm aware of after its release. But people were upset about that.
I'm just trying to think of like of other examples of this outside of the game industry. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to, I mean, in most cases, you're not going to watch a movie that was incomplete and then later it's going to be, you know,
a complete version.
You've definitely got things like director's cuts or additional footage, but like, in no way are people feeling that that's the experience, you know. I don't know. Like, or, oh my goodness. What if games could turn out like the remastered versions of Star Wars? No. Sit with me here for a second.
Okay.
What if a director has a vision of how they want to remake something?
Mm-hmm.
But like, okay, with Star Wars at least, if you have the original copies, you still have that. But in an all-digital future, if the director's like, I think it should go this way, they could patch out the stuff you liked.
Ooh.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there could, what's going to be the video game equivalent to Han shot first? Right? Like, I mean,
it's coming.
I know. It probably is. I mean, because This is a very old example, but do you know the game Plants vs. Zombies?
Right. I very specifically, I cannot play it on my phone anymore because PopCap wants us to play Plants vs. Zombies 2, which is free to play or something I don't
like
about
that,
it. Yeah, so they're not going to patch the old one.
But more specifically to this, The original Plants vs. Zombies game, or maybe a few patches in, whatever, had a Michael Jackson zombie. But after Michael Jackson passed away, they considered it to be somewhat in bad taste. Right. So they patched it out.
Right.
But a lot of people really liked it. And you don't have the option of having it on or off. It's just gone. Like, right. it was taken out. And since no physical version of that game came out, the content is lost.
Right.
It's just gone. But, you know, right now, if a game has been pressed to a physical disc, you at least have that.
Right, right. Well, that makes me wonder, when they go through these iterative processes, if they ever press a new version so they don't have to push out a patch, or if they just don't care and say, well, whatever, we're just going to keep, you know, we know that this bug exists, we could add the patch to it, but we're not going to go through the expense of making a new Glassmaster.
Well,
or you know, in the case of like a Switch game where it would be easier to reprogram, like, you know, do you get like version 1.2.9.A27B/6?
Yeah. Well, so far, no. So far, no. But I mean, I don't think that's it's impossible for them to do. I don't think there's much desire to do it right now because, as I said, the cartridge you buy is fully completable right now.
Right.
But in cases where games have been changed due to other factors, for example, let's look at Zelda 64. Early carts had red blood. Later carts had green.
Really?
Yes.
I must have an early cart.
Do you have the gold cart?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's the earliest version.
Okay.
But yeah, they changed it.
Did they? So is the 3DS version green?
Yes.
Oh. I mean, that's not quite a Greedo shot first situation, but it's coming close.
But it is definitely something. Something that was changed in later versions. The video game Little Big Planet had a song that had a song in that had some Arabic verses that read from the Quran, mm-hmm. apparently, mm-hmm. which seems strange to me, Little Big Planet. But anyway, so they made it that if you have the disc version, there's a mandatory day one patch that removes those songs from being able to be listened to.
Huh.
And so I believe, I'd have to check on this, but I believe later editions, later presses of the discs had those removed from the beginning.
Interesting. Okay.
But like that's a different thing. Or sometimes like If a game has songs that go out of copyright,
right.
The later versions will be released without those songs in it. For example,
fun Netflix examples. I swear the version that's on Netflix of The Wonder Years has a completely different arrangement, or like at least different parts of the opening theme than the one I remember.
Oh, I'm sure.
on TV, and in some cases, oh geez, which series was it? Was it like Charmed or something? Like they couldn't use the song anymore, so they had to do a new intro, like entirely.
That happens pretty frequently. It's House, when it had international versions, didn't have the licensing for the Massive Attack song drop, so they made something like it.
Uh-huh.
I think they might have restored it now, but I remember some of the DVDs I had. I was like, this is not correct. The show Working, this is an old show, Fred Savage vehicle.
Boy.
Their original song was a 5 o'clock world.
Yep.
Or was it Working in a Coal Mine? I don't remember, but they replaced one with the other, and that was and it was an instrumental version.
Sure.
So like when things hit syndication, a lot of people ask me why I collect Laserdiscs. No, nobody asks me that.
I'm sorry.
But like people who come to my room go, why? And I don't have very many good reasons. I like the cover art. I like stuff. But in some cases, it is because they are the original versions. In a lot of movies, especially lower budget movies, the songs they use in the movie go out of copyright, or they don't have the licensing for it anymore. So when it hits your $5 Walmart DVD, they've taken things out of it.
Huh.
You know, or in some cases can't even release the movies anymore.
Wow.
Some movies have gone out of print because the amount of people who would buy a DVD doesn't equal the number of the amount of, you know, money they need to make to pay for the licensing.
Okay.
Or they re-record commentary tracks to update them, but sometimes the original commentary tracks are different or better.
Oh, that's...
Yeah.
Wow.
So I mean, like, sometimes when we're buying a complete edition of something, we don't realize what might actually be missing. Sorry, did I blow your mind?
You did. Okay.
But going back to it, like... as long as physical media exists for things, we can still have the option of seeing the original.
Right.
Like
right,
I've got the Star Wars complete edition on Laserdisc.
Mm-hmm.
This is the definitive edition, and it's, you know, it's the original versions without any of the digital effects added. You know, there's no what is it? No Jabba the Hutt in the first movie now. You know.
Right.
It's the versions that were shown in the theater, or at least the earliest, you know, home video versions.
Oh, sure.
Like
Jedi, for example.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember. I have like a version that was like taped off of HBO.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And
yeah.
When the Twi'lek, whatever, you know, the dancer, like falls into the pit, there's like this brief little nip slip. Right?
What? And,
like, I noticed it when I was, like, a teenager.
Of course you did.
Of course. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, you know, like, running the tape back. I'm really?
Yeah.
Does that? No. And then, like, you know, I find out, I researched it, because, you know, the internet was a thing that was becoming to be a thing at that point. And sure enough, that was edited out in, like, later home releases. Similarly, I swear, like, the DVD version of Star Trek The Motion Picture I have.
Yeah.
Is not the one I remember.
It's very possible that it isn't.
There's missing pieces of dialogue.
Yep.
Including one where I swear that Ilea calls Decker Imzadi.
Okay.
And for those who don't know, the motion picture was kind of repurposed from what had been
Star Wars Phase 2.
Star Wars Phase 2. That was supposed to release this TV show in the 70s, and then they did the movie instead, where Kirk like literally comes into Star Wars Phase 2 and says, nope, I'm taking the ship back, and then that's basically it. But, you know, a lot of the ideas from Phase 2 became, 10 years later, became the basis for Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yes.
So, you know, from like an in-universe perspective, maybe Beta Zeds and Deltons are related, and they could use the same words. But I... You know, the whole Decker and Ilea thing was totally Troy and Riker, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, we are so off.
We're a little bit off topic now. But I mean, that's the thing. At least we're in an age right now where we can go on the internet, we can find the original versions, and we can trace back and we can see where these changes were made, and in many cases still find a way to get a version that we remember, something like that. But with games, we've already seen it with like smartphone games and things. You know, when you have these mandatory updates, and the original versions will cease to exist. And for things that never had a physical release or a physical release that requires an online presence, from a preservationist point of view, this is kind of scary.
Right.
And even with movies in the future, you know, as you said, some Netflix versions are different from TV broadcast versions.
Yeah, for some reason, like the... And this was 15 years ago? Longer, I guess. When did the Highlander Endgame movie come out?
It was... 93?
No.
That's Highlander 3, right?
No. Endgame. It was based on the TV show. No, there's like this rooftop fight scene that there's like a giant JVC logo because they're like, you know, filming it on an actual rooftop somewhere, right?
Yeah.
For the home release, they had to blur out the JVC logo. And I don't know why that would be a requirement. It's like, you know, you're filming in a public place. You're giving JVC free advertising. Do they just come and say, we don't want our brand associated with immortals beheading each other on rooftops. Thank you.
I guess. Wow. Yeah. I suppose. I suppose. And I guess, which is strange because on the other hand, perhaps it was taken out just because JVC didn't pay. Perhaps they asked JVC to pay for it. You know, like,
well, why should they?
Because it is advertising. You know. Yeah, but, I don't know.
You know, they didn't have to film the whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. I have one more example, a bad example, and this has to do with DLC.
Ooh.
Maybe it's two related examples.
Go for it.
Did you ever play any Prince of Persia games?
I played the original Prince of Persia.
Okay. I played through the whole Sands of Time trilogy that Ubisoft put out. Then they did a fourth game that was just a self-titled Prince of Persia game.
Yeah.
That had nothing to do with Sands of Time or the original. But I still really liked it. It was a fun experience. But the game just kind of ends, and there's this like heart-wrenching scene at the end where, like, you know, you're like trudging through the desert as the credits play. Right.
Okay.
And then the game just kind of ends and, like, promises a sequel, I guess.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, cool. I can handle this. Well, the sequel never comes out. Instead, you get this, like, post-ending DLC, which feels like the real ending of the game, which sets up the sequel even more. A sequel that, you know, at this point has been over a decade and will probably never come. So, you know, I don't know how to feel about that because I got the DLC, but I don't want to, like, encourage people to, like, not finish games, right? Like, not finish developing them.
Yeah.
It occurs to me with the benefit of hindsight that this might have been less a thing where it's like, hey, we had this great story for a second game. The fact that it never came out, maybe they knew it would never come out because of how that the game did in sales. And they were like, all right, we have enough that we can, like, throw together something for the people who are playing it to, like, end the story a little more properly and release this DLC instead of its a whole new game. Because, like, Liliana's Song, going back to that, or Witch Hunt or whatever, like, as standalone experiences aren't worth much, but paired with, you know, the original game, I think it's worth something. Champion's Ballad on Legend of Zelda, the Breath of the Wild, right? I haven't quite beat the game yet, and it's been a year. But I don't feel like I'm missing anything by not playing through, you know, the earlier phase of things, especially when you know it's not going to end well. But I'm still curious. I still want to try it out. I want to see how things are different. And it doesn't have any value outside of, you know, the main game. So it's like a nice addition, but I don't feel like I'm missing something. Now, contrasting that again, bringing it back to Dragon Age, there was some post-game single player DLC that did feel like they pushed the game out, gave it a bad ending, and said, all right, we'll do the real one later. And I can't be too mad because the rest of the game was so fun. But you get to the final fight, like, the enemy that was, like, menacing you the entire time was just kind of not a threat. There's some commentary there that the organization you were building to fight the threat is more of a threat to the world than the bad guy. Yeah. But, you know, you get this revelation that a member of your party was not who they appeared to be. And it's like, okay, Dragon Age 4 is gonna address this, right? But then you have this whole post-game DLC thing where they address it, and it's really, really good. And you, because it's like a time jump involved, you can't go back to the earlier part of the save anymore. It's the same game still. Yeah. It's the same game still, though. And it was really good, but it's like, this, you know, This only added so many hours of content. It really feels like it should have been part of the main game. So is this a case where it's like they have such an awesome, huge, polished game, they just couldn't get this one thing finished, right? Or I don't know. I don't feel too bad about it, but it's like I don't want to encourage that, where it's like you have this massive story-driven game and like the last thing that happens is like, oh, that's it? And then it's over. Another example is Mass Effect 3 Citadel. I haven't played it yet. I've bought it. It just gives you more character stuff to do. So it doesn't really affect the outcome the game, but it's just more time with your friends, basically.
How about this?
Yeah.
If something is available as a DLC,
mm-hmm.
do you feel that it can be considered canon? Now hear me out.
Okay.
Because something that's DLC, not everybody buys the DLC. You know?
Sure.
A lot of people, and I mean, there's statistics to back this up, you know. It's probably, depending on the game, I doubt many games cross 50% for people who, buy all the DLC. So, can you directly reference DLC stuff when you make a sequel?
Example, I'm going to go back to Dragon Age again.
Okay.
Two things. First, when you play Dragon Age Origins, it is possible for your main character to die, and it's like a legitimate ending to the game. And it's one that you can basically choose. Like, it won't just happen. You're like, oh, screw it. You know, it's like, you make a decision. And so for my first playthrough, my warden died.
Okay.
But I was still able to play Dragon Age Awakenings, even though she was dead, and even though this takes place after the events of that game, it's the same character, and so all her relationships are intact, with the characters who do make it to the DLC, which aren't a whole lot, but enough. So it's weird. Like, these two things are mutually exclusive from happening, and they don't address it at all. So in one respect, that's nice that they let me do that. But I really should have been forced, I feel like, to play another character. I guess I could have too. I could have rolled my own and done a new one, and it would have been a different thing. But I missed her. I wanted her back. So it's like when you can get the dog back at the end. Never mind. It's a different game. But Dragon Age 2.
You're really stuck on this dog stuff.
Different. No, that's has to do with not Skyrim. Different game.
I know. I just okay.
But Dragon Age 2 has a character named Anders who only existed previously in the Awakening DLC. And there's an ending you can have where he dies also.
Okay.
But like they hand wave that away in Dragon Age 2 by saying he faked his death to get away from the wardens and whatever. But like, if you didn't play it, it's no big deal. You don't have to have that backstory to know like what he is and what Justice is, because they explain it in the game. But if you did play it, the decisions you made affect how Dragon Age 2 unfolds a little bit, at least dialogue and some other stuff. But what happens as canon, like Anders can exist outside of you playing that game, and then they worked around an ending where he dies. But also, Dragon Age and the other BioWare games exist on this spectrum of like certain things can happen, and they can make those decisions not matter as much or matter at all, or they can incorporate it in interesting ways, which they do plenty of both. So yes, it's possible, but you have to do it well.
Okay.
I know that's a lot. Should we move on to future retro and pile of shame?
I guess so, because it dovetails in, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's move on ahead.
Okay.
In future retro, we talk about contemporary video games that have the potential to be remembered as classics,
or classics that we played for the first time, or just more recently.
And in pile of shame, we talk about the games we haven't been playing. And we try to convince each other if we should.
Or not.
Well, okay, let me do mine first. It's a little off topic, but it kind of connects a little bit. But
okay.
My future retro this time is a game that is already retro in the minds of a lot of people. I'm going to be talking about Bayonetta. Have you played Bayonetta?
Oh, man. Okay. Yes, I played the copy that you generously let me open. The Wii U two-disc
yes,
set.
Yes.
So
yes.
I don't think I actually put Bayonetta 2 in. I think I just played part of the first one. Because I figured I'll get my own copy, and then I won't have to worry about playing 2, and that never happened.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Okay, but so you've played it a little bit. Did you ever play any of the Devil May Cry series?
No, but I, you know, in college I watched a lot of people play it.
Okay. So I mean it's that kind of stylish combat, you know, type of game. I quite like it. This is my first quadruple dip.
Wow.
Cuz I bought it first for the PlayStation 3. I bought Bayonetta for the PlayStation 3, and the frame rate was atrocious. So I heard that the Xbox 360 version was a lot better, so I bought that, which it is. It's a lot better. And then it got announced for Wii U, so I bought it again. And now I have it on Switch. And on the Switch, I have the possibility of actually getting through the whole game. I've replayed the first few chapters so many times, but like a lot of games that I started on other platforms, the Switch version is probably going to be the one that's going to get me through it.
Okay.
Just because of the portable nature and everything. But regardless, I think that this re-release of Bayonetta was released in a way that's very un-Vink. In the fact that only a very, very limited number of physical copies were printed. A very limited number.
Okay.
Probably, I mean, around 1,000. Sorry. Around 10,000. I'm thinking in Japanese numbers, so one sure. mon. One mon, like Ichimon, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, around 10,000 copies, give or take, were printed of this special edition called the Bayonetta 2 Nonstop Climax Edition. Nice title, by the way. Okay, the U.S. version of Bayonetta 2 ships on in a box, and you've got a physical version of Bayonetta 2 and a download code for the first Bayonetta, which this one really will hurt its resale value.
Okay.
Because its resale value, because it says right on the case, you know, comes with a download code for Bayonetta 1. But if you buy a used copy, that code's already been used.
Right. Yep.
It's not like the cartridge unlocks
anything.
But
you can buy it for like 20 or 30 bucks on the eShop, right? I forget which.
Yes, it's not that expensive, but at the same time, like, I wonder if you have the physical copy of the cartridge and whether you still get the discount. Because the game itself is like 30 bucks on the eShop, but it's only $10 if you've already bought Bayonetta 2.
I see. Okay.
That's an interesting question. If anyone who has the Bayonetta 2 cartridge, who hasn't already redeemed your download code, if someone could just put that cartridge in by itself and... It must, though. It must. Because how would the game know otherwise? The cartridges aren't unique.
Right.
I wonder. I'd be really intrigued if someone could try it, though. That would be... But anyway, I'm getting off topic. That was the regular edition. And the Nonstop Climax Edition was also released in Europe. But that version also has a download code, despite having a really nice steel book and, you know, trading cards and things like that. It still lacks a physical version of Bayonetta 1. Mm-hmm. The only version that has it is the Japanese version.
Right.
But the card itself is completely universal.
Right.
It's got English on it. It's got everything. And, you know, there's nothing even written Japanese on it.
Okay.
On the card itself, it could easily have been printed and put into a special edition. Now, I realize that the cartridges are more expensive to print than a disc, like quite a bit more. But I think people would have been willing to pay the difference, you know? Or maybe not. Maybe I'm an old fogey who clings to physical media. But right now I have this cartridge, so if anything is going to be changed in it, at least I have this version. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that kind of connects with a little bit of what we're talking
absolutely, because that's exactly like the BioWare stuff I was talking about, where the character DLC, you know, but except for it's much bigger, it's like an entire flipping game.
It is, and I don't know, but I'm going to have all three of them nicely arranged in my shelf when the third one comes out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're going to, you know, I've got three different cassettes, three different cases. Sorry, by the way, when I keep using the word cassette, I know people are going to write in that that's wrong.
Right.
It's just because I've been in Japan too long.
Right, that's what they call it there.
They call them cassettes, here. So, sorry, game card, whatever.
Yes.
I'm not like your mom going, "You gonna play your Nintendo tapes?" My mom doesn't sound like that at all, by the way. But she did use the phrase Nintendo tapes. But it went full circle. Now I've got my data recorder, so I do have Nintendo tapes.
All right.
but anyway.
Don't go breaking my leg.
But anyway, Bayonetta is a wonderful game. But I will say that since the physical version from Japan is pretty much entirely sold out, you can't get one now without paying tremendous scalper fees.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't recommend it.
Okay.
Unless you really, really don't care about owning physical copies, which I know a lot of you probably don't. But I feel that a download code has no value.
Dang. All right.
Well, and it's my personal, and I feel the same way about the upcoming Mega Man collection. It's going to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, the first six games, mm-hmm. the Famicom ones, on this cassette.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's going to have a download code for 7, 8, 9, and 10. There will be no game card that has those games on them. So I feel that when I'm buying it, I will only buy it when I can get it for a price that I realize that that's the price I'm paying for the first six games, not the first 10, because
right.
because I feel that we have lost a tremendous amount of value by not having the whole thing on the cassette, or unless they do something where buying a used copy allows it to automatically unlock those others, but they won't.
Right.
There's no chance they will.
Because this is the entire point, yeah.
Exactly. But, I mean, one of the points of this... And I just... we talked in a previous podcast about L.A. Noire made the game unplayable unless you downloaded this giant thing. So it made it that the physical version really had no value.
Right.
Other than perhaps shelf candy.
Right.
Ooh, I like that phrase.
Did Mega Man 8 come out on PlayStation?
PlayStation and Sega Saturn.
Okay, because that's I have just about all the carts. I think I might actually have all the carts between the NES and Famicom.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of 1 through 6 in with some of them in like a virtual console form. I only have 7 on Virtual Console, and then, 9 and 10. Did I buy 10? I bought 9 for sure. I might have bought 10.
I know you bought 9.
I might. Oof. So here's the question. Do I buy 10 for the Wii, which is going to have its services shut down pretty much around the time that this podcast comes out? Or do I get it on the Wii U?
Nope.
What do you mean, nope?
Neither.
Why?
Because how often do you play your Wii U?
Enough.
Okay.
Never.
I'd say if you're resigned to the fact that it's going to be a digital title anyway, you might as well get it on Switch.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That collection's going to go up to 10, and since there's no physical version you can buy of that anyway, although I don't know, maybe the PlayStation 4 collection was physical? Well, sorry, I'm not sure.
It'd be a lot cheaper to just buy the one game is what I'm saying. That's why I wouldn't go for the collection.
I suppose, but...
I don't know. I'll think about it.
The collection's going to go for like $40.
Okay, that's really good.
Yeah, it's a good price, but that and that's the thing. Like when it drops down to like $30, that's an okay price for me to pay to get the first six Mega Man games.
Right.
You know, and then I'll consider the others a temporary bonus. You know,
right? Ah, boy.
I don't know, but I'm weird that way. You know, I'm weird that way. That's why I rebought. That's why, you know, I made you pick me up a copy of NES Remix. Despite owning both of them digitally already. That's right. Why I rebought Snipper Clips. I really have a problem. But the thing is, what I will recommend is for our listeners, most of you have most of the Nintendo systems already. The price of the Wii U copies of Bayonetta have gone down since the Switch version came out. Because a lot of people had probably traded those in to get the new ones.
Right.
I would recommend that there's not a huge amount of difference between the Wii U and the Switch versions. There's enough that, you know, if you care about those things. But if you care about physical, probably play it there or, you know, just want to play it cheaper. But I don't know. But Bayonetta 2, however you play it, you should. They're great. So that's my future retro.
Okay. I have a pile of shame.
Shame.
Ooh.
Yeah, this goes way back. Oh, geez. Was it 2003 or 2006? You said you remember me buying it, so I must have been 2006? It must have been.
Probably, because I think it was already a bit old by that point.
Okay. Mine is Zelda 2, but very specifically, it's the Japanese version. The first incarnation of this I ever played was on a GBA carpet. It was the Japanese release, right? Like the Game Boy Advance had these series of games, both in Japan and the US, where they would put an NES game, or in this case, a Famicom or Famicom Disk System game, onto a GBA cart. And,
awesome packaging,
right? Oh, it was beautiful. That's one of the reasons I got it. So it's like the cart came in a replica of the case art for the Famicom Disk System version inside of another box that kind of presented it as, you know, like it was the actual thing. So much smaller, of course.
Love it.
But you and the cartridges themselves are a lot more attractive than the ones they released in the U.S. and the packaging of also. Goes without saying, much better.
Make sure we put up something in the description about what the packaging looked like.
Oh, I can probably just take a photo of it and stick it up in the show.
Oh, excellent,
notes.
Excellent.
Yeah. Gorgeous. Okay, but I would play the game and say, oh my god, it's broken. I keep leveling up, and whenever I go to save the game, everything goes back to level one.
Well, yeah, I remember you complaining about that.
Yeah, and I don't know if you told me or if I just found out later that the problem is the leveling system in the Famicom Disk System version is different. You are required to go through a certain sequence in Zelda 2, but you can pick whichever one you want to do in the Japanese version. And so I'm like, well, I'm just going to stick everything into my attack. But that's dumb, because what happens whenever you save and come back to the game later is that everything reverts to the lowest level skill that you have. So if you knock everything into one stat, it all goes back down to one. So you got to level things up evenly. And so by the American version, they're like, okay, we'll just make them level it up evenly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So the another difference that caused is that it was a lot easier to go through those levels. It required fewer points to actually do that, because you could lose it. Whereas in the U.S. version, all those thresholds were much higher because it's a very static
permanent
progression.
Effects.
Yeah. So that's only one difference. But I bring this one up because this feels like a really early example of how this game just kind of wasn't done. I don't want to...
I'll go with you.
I say that because The US version definitely feels more polished. They made some interesting decisions and changes, like I said, with the leveling up stats. But like there's some other like difference and weirdness. Like the over the in the overworld, you know, there are these I guess random encounters you can have, more or less, which you can avoid and run away from.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a very RPG style thing. And like in the Famicom Disk System version, they look like little like red and black sperms running around the countryside.
Yeah. They don't. I mean, in the
they're literal blobs. It's like
yeah. In the NES version, they have been made to look similar to the type of encounter you're going to have.
Yeah. And like you know, there's like you know, bad, worse, and worst that you could run into, so you can choose which one you want to pick. Well, you know, you have that same visual distinction, but it's like, you know, blob, red blob. I'll don't get hit by the red blob. Yeah. So they made that change. There's a boss that's duplicated in one of the temples. Right. And so
yeah, it really does look like they ran out of time.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. So like, I think the NES version, like the second version of that boss, is what is used for the first version, and they add an entirely new one, the big ogre with the giant spinning mace thing, that is not in the Famicom Disk System version. So like I embarked when I got the actual Disk System version many moons ago. I embarked on this quest to do a comparison video, and I made a lot of notes and took a lot.
I'd watch that.
Right. Well, I made a lot of notes and I took a lot of clips of it. But I never got through it for various reasons, probably the impending birth of my child. So, you know, this was like 6 years ago plus. So pretty pileful, pretty shameful.
I'd be lying if I said it was the longest one of our videos has taken to put together.
Tell me about it. But I did this because the one we linked to from the original episode two of the web series went down. So I was like, well, you know, rather than link to someone else's that might go down, I'll just make my own with blackjack and hookers.
Yeah.
But I never finished it, so.
Which is the other stuff they added in the NES version. I'm really surprised by that, actually.
I know, you know, typically so, yeah. Yeah. So I mean, I feel like, again, like sort of the benefit and curse of this was you had cartridges where you had to get the game right the first time. Now, they didn't do this with the Famicom Disk System version, but it is just disk. You can write the bits you want. Like, you know, the consumer could even do it, for crying out loud, right? So they never released a version that I'm aware of the NES one that later came back to Japan, which they very well could have, and just been like, oh, you want Zelda 2? Here's the real Zelda 2. Oh, is it different from what you remember? Oh, well, that's weird. I don't remember it being those sperm blobs at all.
I've got an example.
Okay.
I've got an example of one that did actually hit back to Japan. When they made the original Mother game, which Earthbound, I'm talking about the NES one that was going to come out in the US but never did until very recently, released as Earthbound Beginnings.
On the Wii U.
Yes, on the Wii U. They made some change. I think you can play it on the 3DS now, too.
Okay.
But anyway. Okay. And the Classic. Right? It's on the Classic?
I'm not sure if that one was on the Classic or not. Earthbound's on the Super NES Classic,
but not
Earthbound Begins.
Not the original. But anyway, so they're for example, they had some enemies who were smoking cigarettes, and they took it out for the localization, and a few other changes and things like that. So when they re-released the games later on the Game Boy Advance as part of the Mother 1 and 2 collection, they actually used the US versions of the sprites and things for that.
Well, there you go.
So it actually came back. Another one that I don't think it really hit Japan back, but how about Doki Doki Panic? Yume Kojo Doki Doki Panic, which became Super Mario Bros. 2.
Sure.
Is a disk system game. They remade it to be Super Mario Bros. 2, and they changed more than just the character sprites. They changed quite a bit of the game. And that was released back in Japan later as Super Mario USA.
But at least they didn't call it Doki Doki Panic still, right? Like,
that's true. That's true. They did change the name. But, okay, there's a lot of Final Fantasy games that get that they take the U.S. version, which usually adds some things to it, and they re-release it in Japan as, like, Final Mix or International version.
Okay, so there's more to this than just the fact that Zelda was a disc system game. And this has happened before in other... Okay, interesting, interesting.
I want to bring up just one more thing, of course. The original Dragon Quest. When it came out, the original one was a quite early Famicom game. No save battery, so it was a password-based game. And the sprites were very, very simplistic. In fact, your main character sprite and all the other ones, like on the overworld, they didn't face the direction they were going. Right. They always faced down. So they would walk like they were, you know, they always faced the same direction, even if they were going a different one. And when you fought enemies, the backgrounds were like just plain black. Very simple. But when they re-released it, it was years later now.
Right.
And that wasn't going to cut the mustard anymore. Another phrase that I don't think I've used in any other
podcast.
Good
grief. What is happening today?
I've become a 1950s podcaster. Anyway, I don't know how that would work. When they re-released it, they needed to update it. So now... your character faces different directions, and there's a battery backup save system, and also when you're fighting enemies, they take note of where you are in the map. Like if you're in a forest area, there's now a forest background that the enemies appear on. If you're in the mountains, there's a mountain background.
Right.
They really made it look a lot better. So that
the game. Yeah. It didn't freaking turn the sprite.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Well, yeah, but like, I mean, that was the same as the original. I think it was probably because the MSX version was the first one released, and there were hardware limitations there.
Sure. So they ported improvements. It's a little fair.
That's not to say that the MSX couldn't have had a sprite that moved, you know, that way, but it might have been a harder thing, and the Famicom version was a port, you know.
Right.
So
right.
That makes a lot more
sense.
I'd have to research into that a little bit more, but definitely I think the process of porting the first Dragon Quest to the to the NES probably impacted future Dragon Quest games and what they were going
Absolutely.
To do with them.
Absolutely.
After that, even though Japan never got a port of the, like, I'd call it almost a remaster. There was enough change.
Oh, sure.
But there was never a port going back. But definitely going forward, that's the direction the series took.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, should we go to the mailbag?
Let's go to the mailbag.
All right.
And now, a haiku. Maybe one more patch. Then the game will be complete. Still, my face is tired.
Oh, is this where we play the mailbag song? Going to the mailbag. I hope the bitrate is high enough that we can understand what they're saying in the mailbag. Would have been better if this rhymed. Is that the song?
No.
Okay.
Hi, Sean and Vince. This is Jody, long-time listener.
Hi, Jody.
Oh, hey, Jody.
Used games and retro games and all that stuff. More for Vink, I guess, because he collects too much physical media, kind of like I do.
Ooh, he knows me.
Do you find that a cartridge that had the battery replaced would hold... like more value or less value, or does it change the value at all? Does it depend on how the battery was replaced? Like, was it soldered in versus a little whatever they call it, battery holder thing? I'm good with words. If you can answer my question, that'd be cool. Bye.
Oh, goodness. That is a very good question.
And we've answered it before.
Yes, in one that we didn't record. I wonder if my answer is going to be the same.
I wonder too. We have no way of knowing because if we did, it would be out already.
Yes.
Yeah,
this is from the
lost episode. Yeah.
Okay. But I mean, I doubt that I've changed so much in the few months since we recorded that that I'm going to have much of a different answer. But I find that a game that has an unworking save has definitely lower value than one that has a working save.
Sure.
So I think your top value of a game is definitely going to be one that has the original battery that it came with, just because there is, especially with certain types of cartridges, like, for example, a PC Engine card, opening it up to replace a battery will do damage to the actual...
Sure.
You know, you can minimize it if you're very good at it. Cartridges that have screws that you can easily remove, that the battery just pops out, that don't require soldering, frankly, I don't see how that would reduce the value in any way. In fact, I think that given the choice between something that has an original non-working battery and a replaced working battery, I would choose the replaced working battery cartridge, and I would pay more for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, right now, my Dreamcast does not have a working battery inside of it. Because it's not user replaceable very easily. It's something that does need to be soldered and to take it out. So if I'm buying another Dreamcast and I see one that has a new battery put into it, or better yet, some people who have been modifying it so it will be user replaceable. You know, instead of soldering a new one on, they put like a little battery holder in there.
Right.
I think that is a much more valuable system to me. But I mean, I understand people wanting to retain absolutely all of the original. This goes back to spine card collecting. You know, those little Obi cards that are in CD releases.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it doesn't have that, a lot of people feel that the value is way down. And I get that. I understand that people want to buy something that's in the same way as it came out. But for me, even though I am a collector, I don't care. Because if it has that Obi card, I don't package it in a way that, like, I don't display my games in a way that it would show that anyway.
Right.
I just stick it inside the manual put it back in the case.
Ditto.
I mean, it's always kind of a nice little bonus, like when you buy a used game and you open it up and you're like, ooh, it has it. I don't feel like I'm angry if it doesn't.
Right. Like, you know, I won't not buy it, like, you know, those red player's choice versions of things or $20. Ugh, it's.
But a game missing the manual, though.
Yeah.
That I have a
that
problem
upsets
with.
Me.
I
know,
feel. I feel
back
like
when we
that's
still had
part of the
manuals.
Experience. Manuel.
Grief.
My
cartridge came with a Manuel.
But I think with a lot of things, I think that, I mean, from the best perspective, is, I think one should mention if the battery was replaced.
Yeah. I mean,
like if you're listing something as, you know, as the original, but personally, as I said before, I will buy it. I will pay more attention to a listing that does have the battery replaced. That's the one I want. Because right now, if I buy a cart, I don't know if it still works.
Right.
It's crazy that most of my Famicom carts still work, despite those batteries being sometimes 30 years old.
Right.
You know, it's amazing to me, but when I buy a game, I pretty much assume that it's not going to work. But if I'm going on an eBay listing, it says the cart has replaced a battery, and it's done by someone who knows what they're doing, so they've not, you know, ruined anything inside, I find that that's a more valuable you know, purchase. But maybe that's just me, because as much as I am in crazy into physical media, that's not one that bothers me much.
You know, I think that is almost verbatim the answer you gave last time.
It's very possible.
I would only add now that these cartridges are getting so old, this really is a big problem where, you know, having the original battery just isn't feasible anymore. Now, if you're lucky and you haven't lost your data, at least the earlier ones, I'm not sure about all of them, the earlier NES cartridges that had battery backups just basically had a clip, so you just got to take it out and pop a new one back in.
Yep.
But
yep.
if you care about the data that's on it, there is a way, if you're careful, to keep the current yep. going so you don't lose the data.
Yep, and, you just got to put in the, like a... what it would, like a you got to splice in some other current, right?
Yeah. So, you know, you can get the new one in there and you're good to go still. I don't think there's any data I have on old cartridges I care that much about, but it would be nice to, you know, have the Zelda 2 save I had when I was 8 years old or whatever it was. But, you know, what's worse, actually, is the Pokemon cartridges, like the Game Boy ones,
yes.
the Game Boy Advance, all that, like, they're dying a lot faster, you know? And,
yeah,
and
because
like
they had, the clock, right? The clock, you mm-hmm. like, because they were always on to keep track of, like, yeah, so you're probably going to have, the original Pokemon, like Red and Blue carts, are going to outlast the Game Boy Color ones by a fair amount.
Sure. Yeah. So my Blue, at least 2 years ago when we did the Super Game Boy video, Bob was still there. Bob with three Bs, still there. Level 100 or something, 99. I don't remember. It was around
cool.
there. Like that's the only Pokemon game I ever really played. This is such a great topic for a video. I actually did a version of this for a convention appearance. That's how like the Minus Worlds video came to be. Was that I was presenting it as like a slideshow kind of, but you know with video clips.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the jokes I did during the presentation became jokes. In that version, but then I didn't have the Famicom Disk System version at the time, so when we did that, like that was all new.
So the
most recent one I'm shopping around is something called the Donkey Kong Soul Wars, which God, I hope we make a video out of that soon. We need to talk after the podcast, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
Thanks for the question, Jody. That
was a great question.
That was a great question, and it just so happened to dovetail into our topic for this week. So I'm glad that we didn't answer it the first time.
Yeah, that wasn't a bug.
Fortunate.
It was a feature.
Oh boy. So
it wasn't a bug.
I'll see you at Moe's Gaming Classic this year. I'm hoping to go. I gotta ask Ben Heck a question.
Ooh.
It's very important. All right.
Sean's gonna propose.
I'm gonna propose something, all right. Do you have a question for Famicom Denshi Mail? Tweet us at Famicom Dojo with the hashtag Denshi Mail. Call us at 608-492-1923 and leave us a voicemail that we can play on the podcast or in a new video response. Leave a comment on this episode or one of our other videos. Or if you just want to share your own future retro or pile of shame, you can even send us a link to your YouTube video to be added to our official Denshi Mail playlist. Head over to famicomdojo.tv/podcast for more details. All right, let's bring it home then.
All right, you might be listening to this one not on an iPhone or a smartphone.
Sure.
You might be listening to this through this thing. What is it? Google has it. It's Utabe.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, you know, the internet's a series of tubes, and this one is yours.
Ah, I see.
Yeah,
I see.
Yeah.
I don't think it's grammatically correct. It should probably be your tube.
Yeah.
But anyway, new service.
New service. We've been going back and forth on whether or not we should put the podcast on YouTube, and we finally think we have a really good way to do it.
Hooray!
So one benefit is instead of having these show notes on a separate website that you never go to, believe me, I know you don't go there. We can have it in the description instead on YouTube, and better yet, especially if we're referencing our own videos that we did in the past, which, you know, it'd be weird if we'd like to one in the future, we can add those as well so that you can go right to it. Maybe, you want to remember where you were, you can, or even if you like listen to the audio version, on your podcatcher app or whatever, we'll have we're planning to have in the description timestamp links to each section that you can go to. So if you want to find a future retro or a pile of shame you listened to before, or a topic, or you want to skip ahead to our witty banter at the end like this, or the haikus. Oh, the haikus. You could totally do that without hopefully a lot of fuss. And then maybe we'll get people to listen to the podcast some more. Because what's the other thing that we're going to do, Vink?
Yep. The other thing that we're going to do is we're going to continue to have the podcast, but that's the best way to listen to our things right away.
Yep. Yep. We'll
Sorry, I'm not sure what you were leading
yes,
me into.
Yes, that's what I was leading you to.
Okay.
The YouTube version will come up a week later or so.
So basically, you're going to have a number of different ways to listen, a number of different ways. And one thing that we missed from the iTunes version was it was very hard to get your comments right away because you had to go to an external website or find another way to contact us. But now you can just leave your comments right in YouTube and where you're listening anyway. And then if there's a video that you like, if we talk about a previous Famicom Dojo video, you're already in the place you can watch it. So we hope you will.
Exactly. We haven't finalized all the details yet. So actually, the one episode before this one is might be the first one you noticed. You listened to on there or attempted to. We want to make it a little visually interesting so that you're not just watching a static graphic of our very wonderful episode art that we do uniquely for every episode that we put up. So that's going to make it look real nice on YouTube.
And if everything works out the way we're imagining, and Sean hasn't edited out what I'm just saying right now because it didn't work, probably during the part where we were talking about Zelda, you saw a graphic of the case of the Zelda 2 game. Now, we don't know. We're hoping that we can get some of the older episodes on. They might not have as much work put into them, but we're hoping to get a lot of episodes on YouTube so that for those of you who are listening right now off YouTube for the first time, you're not going to have to jump back and forth to other things. And for everyone else who was with us from the beginning, this will be a great and easy way to listen to our old episodes.
For sure. And that kind of helps us parlay into, because we've spun off Pile of Shame into an actual separate, video series, as it were.
Yep.
Which means there's another one we haven't done yet.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
so
yes,
I'm
yes, yes, yes.
Big plans for that coming this year. Please stay tuned.
And
on,
I would
on
like
your
to say,
tube.
Oh yeah, on your tube, yes, yes, me tube. That's how we show our appreciation for it. It's like I liked that video, me tube.
Oh, God.
Right? I don't know what the young kids are into. I think we gotta have Grandpappy come on and do an introduction video for when we get that. Who can?
Yeah.
Talk about the series of tubes. But anyway.
Absolutely.
Other things, for those who are more interested in, I was talking about the collector's edition of Bayonetta earlier in the podcast. I have already recorded a video of me unboxing the version I have. So we could probably put up a couple pictures from that video right in this podcast. So hopefully you saw it already. Sean, you might have to play around with the audio recording here.
Good Lord.
But we're going to try to do more and more of that to try to make what we do on the podcast and what we do on the channel a little more connected.
Yeah, and so fear not. We're definitely trying to do this thing where we don't like stop doing the videos to do the podcast and vice versa. So that's why we're only bi-weekly now. Although Trey likes to tell us that fortnightly is the best nightly.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And how can you, a viewer at home, help out with this? Not much you got to do. If you liked what you heard, give us a like. If you really liked it, give us a share.
Absolutely. And if you want more people to find out about us, you can like head right back over to iTunes and leave us a review. And we just added at least by this point, I'm hoping it got approved. Maybe this part out of it didn't work. We were not on the Google Play Store for some reason that I'm not aware
of. That's because we prioritized Zune.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah, we were on Zune for the longest time.
Yes.
Or the shortest time, I guess. And so now we should also be available on Android devices. Sorry about that, everyone.
I hear those are getting popular.
I don't even know things about things anymore. We have new video non-podcast content coming your way. And once that is ready, you will, if you are on the YouTubes, be the first to know.
And as usual, we'll continue talking about that in the closing minutes of these podcasts. So we can remind you that we are, yes, still alive.
It's my favorite when someone comments in the video asking what happened to Famicom Dojo, and it's from like September of last year. It wasn't that long ago.
I know. People get nostalgic about the weirdest things.
I suppose. Yeah, like video games. Who does that?
I miss Manuel.
All right, that's enough. All right. So then, I guess until next time, then, the dojo is
always part of our memories until our battery runs out.
Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast is produced every week by That's Orange LLC. Theme songs One More Continue and RPG were written and performed by the Amari Tones. Find them on iTunes or amaritones.net. Pixel art by Lewis Sled Judson at lewisstrations.co.uk. Find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, YouTube, or wherever RSS feeds are downloaded.
Famicom Dojo.